Welcome to another Arscast on arsblog.com in association with classicfootballshirts.co.uk. Might be a slightly shorter one this week because of some restrictions in time and some technical problems, but better something than nothing, generally speaking. That may not hold true necessarily for the Arscast. On the way, a blog chat with Gilberto Silva from gunnerblog.com. We shoot the breeze about all things Arsenal, and he's actually learned how to talk more quickly than he used to. Arsene Wenger Hawkins will be here as well. He received a very interesting proposition during the week, and his response to that is forthcoming. We'll have a bet of the week with thanks to bluesquare.com, and if I can think of anything else to throw in between now and then, I will. So a good week football-wise, more or less. In points-wise, we'll say it's a good week. Sunday we went to Chelsea, drew 1-1, Matthew Flamini's goal. Could have won it for us, but I suppose we have to be thankful that Michael Essien is better from 30 yards than he is from 3. Fairly typical that Ashley Cole was the guy who fouled Kleba in the build-up to that, something which did not amuse Arsene Wenger at all. But there you go, what goes around comes around. Glad to see nothing too serious happened, all the rubbish and outrage, so to speak, about the homophobic comments and inflatable mobile phones. I'm glad that it was played down in the end, but when you compare that to the song they were singing about Arsene Wenger and various other things, you know, it pales into insignificance, really. If they're allowed to sing those sort of songs about our manager, we should be allowed to run on the pitch and set Ashley Cole on fire. That's my thinking on it. But maybe I'm alone in that. As well as that, Jens Lehmann had some words for Frank Lampard after the diving theatrics that Lehmann and Drogba got up to, which was fairly pathetic on both their parts, to be fair. Two big, strong guys falling over like, you know, two things that fall over very easily. What falls over very easily? A&R's website seems to. So there you go. And obviously Lampard said some things to Jens. Jens said afterwards that Lampard was the master of insults, a terrible, terrible insults. And having viewed the tape and received a special tape of the match from Sky, I was able to lip read some of the things that Lampard supposedly said to Jens Lehmann. One of them was, "You like Terence Trent D'Arby's second album." My God. As well as that, he said, "You cannot eat as many pies as what I can." Finally, he said, "You are solely responsible for the UK success of David Hasselhoff." It's just not fair. Seriously, somebody needs to do something about Frank Lampard, because that kind of behaviour is just unacceptable. What will it take for the FA to do something about this gratuitous sledging? I mean, is he going to have to accuse somebody of being a Phil Collins fan before they'll take him in hand? Frank Lampard is just lucky, and he should thank his lucky stars every day, that he was choosing to insult one of the game's nicest guys, a man without a temper, a man who will not react to the tiniest provocation. This is Jens Lehmann we're talking about, probably the most cuddly, easygoing guy in all of Premiership football. One day Frank Lampard is going to insult the wrong person, and when he's laid out seeing stars, I will say, "I told you so," except I didn't say it to him. I mean, I'm not going to tell him, am I? Chances of him listening to the Arscaster are fairly slim. There's no point me telling Lampard and telling you, because you can watch out for it. But if I tell Lampard, maybe he'll change his ways and maybe somebody won't punch his face in. And that would not be good for football. Frank Lampard needs his face punched in. End of story. Then on Wednesday night, we went to Wigan for what was surely the game of the season. The excitement had me on the edge of my seat. I nearly wet my pants with hysteria. I just couldn't keep up with all the brilliant flowing football. But at the end of the day, the 1-0 win, the Adebayor goal, the 57-yard strike, or no, 5-foot strike, whatever it was. Thank God for that goal, because it really would have made my night fucking miserable. And if it made my night miserable, what about all the Arsenal fans that went up there and were so good and so loud? You know, if I was feeling bad, how must they feel? I mean, I at least just went to my local pub to watch it. I didn't have to go to Wigan. So, well done to the boys, I suppose. They kept fighting. It wasn't a great performance. It was worrying in ways. There were things about it that I didn't like, but 3 points is 3 points. I've sort of mellowed a bit. On the blog on Thursday morning, I was a little more harsh, and maybe I shouldn't have been. Maybe I need to write these things in the cold light of day instead of coming home and then writing them and then getting up the next morning and thinking about rewriting them and then going, well, fuck that, I've already written it. Although I might have been just a little bit jarred while doing so. A little in my cups, as they say. Right then, onto this week's blog chat, which features Gilberto Silver from gunnerblog.com. We talk about the Chelsea game. I think we talk about the Chelsea game anyway, but mostly what we talk about is 4-5-1 against teams that don't merit us playing 4-5-1. Some in-depth tactical discussion there, or, you know, we just blather on about it for a while. As well as that, we chat about who we might buy in the January transfer window, and we come to the conclusion that while we could do with buying somebody, we're not going to, unless we sell somebody. And then we look ahead to the Portsmouth game on Saturday, not so much the game itself, but the return of two Arsenal old boys in Tony Adams and Sol Campbell. So without further ado, here's this week's blog chat. Okay, this week on the Arscast, the blog chat, we welcome back Gilberto Silva from gunnerblog.com. Hello to you.
Hello to you.
On Sunday, we played Chelsea with a fairly understrength team, you'd have to say, and performed very well. And, you know, despite the last 5 minutes when Chelsea could have won it about six times, we could have got 3 points there. Then last night, we're talking Thursday morning, we went to Wigan. Again, with an understrength team, and it was fucking horrible. It was a really horrible game to watch. My question to you is, are we a team now that responds to the team that we play against, in the sense that when we played against Chelsea, we played very well, and Chelsea are a good team. When we played against Wigan, we played shit, and they're a shit team. What do you think?
It's a fair point. I mean, it seems to be with individuals as much as anything. If you look at somebody like Adebayo, he's getting this reputation as being a big game player, which seems like sort of a strange thing, because you've got to win 3 points against Chelsea is as valuable as 3 points against Wigan or vice versa. So you've got to be up for every game. But it does seem that as a team and as individuals, we sometimes perform better against the big sides. But I think that's less to do with sort of a psychological thing, but more to do with the way they play against us.
Right. Would you go along with my belief that going to Wigan and playing 4-5-1 is just far too negative, considering the players that we have? The Arsene Wenger was always an attacking coach. His teams played attacking football. Sometimes it didn't work out because we were too attacking and got punished for that. Do you think maybe we've gone too far the other way? Because with the greatest respect in the world, go to Real Madrid and play 4-5-1, you don't want to lose. I understand that completely. Go to Chelsea and do the same. But when you go to Wigan, those are teams that we should be really looking to beat and taking the game to.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny because up until last season, even if we had gone to like a Man U or a Chelsea or whoever, we would have set up with a 4-4-2. Arsene, after his first couple of seasons, sat with 4-4-2 and hasn't, he wouldn't derivate from it at all. And he actually came out and said, this is the formation that I play and that I will continue to play it, and I won't be, forced to change by the way that the 4-5-1 became fashionable in the Premiership. But he has developed his own sort of 4-5-1, as he would see it, I think. But I think we are using it unnecessarily now. Like against Wigan, there's no reason for us to go and play with a 4-5-1, because they are an attacking side. It's clear that they were going to at least play a 4-4-2 with McCulloch on the left, as it was. They played even a 4-3-3, and it was a genuine 4-3-3, not a 4-5-1. And the space that we would have had to exploit attacking was definitely there to be had.
The problem, I suppose, I really have with our 4-5-1 is that it really is a 4-5-1. Whereas you look at somebody like Barcelona, who they play a 4-3-3. They have got, let's say, a Gilberto where they use someone like Marquez, where they use Edmilson or Thiago Motta in the centre. Then they have the little guys. They've got the Xavis and Iniestas and Julies and all these sort of guys. People talk about our lack of physical presence, but Barcelona don't have very much more than us. So, yeah. I mean, with the players that we have, if we're not going to play 4-4-2, shouldn't we be looking to play a 4-3-3?
Well, I mean, it's funny because if you think about it, I mean, I hate to sort of set them up as an example, but if you look at Chelsea, who are playing quite a bizarre formation at the moment, but when they had won their two Premiership titles, they played this 4-4-5-1, 4-3-3 system, but it was a definite 4-3-3 in that they had two wide players in Robben and Duff or whoever it was, Joe Cole, and they had very, very few defensive responsibilities because they had, like you say, Ned Milson, they had a Makélélé in there, as we have Gilberto. But it seems, even though we have that, we seem to be unwilling to sort of relinquish players from the midfield five. It's very much a sort of flat five with Henri or Adebayor is quite isolated. You know, we have players who can get forward and score goals. We think they have it in them. But if you look at the records of Fabregas, Kleb, Rosicki, they're not great, actually, at getting into the box and you know, making the difference.
So more goals from midfield. Because there was one point, I think Wigan had a goal kick, and I was looking at it. This was in the first half or the second half? I think it was the first half. And the first half yesterday or against Wigan is not to be held up as any sort of standard for football in any regard or at any level. But Kirkland was on the edge of his box, and the TV screen went about as far as the halfway line, sort of halfway between the halfway line and the centre circle. There wasn't a single player in view, so everything was condensed, you know, into that midfield area.
Sure.
And that is the problem, I think, is that we're getting too hung up on not conceding rather than trying to score. We're making everything far too tight. For us to complain that teams are coming to Ashburton Grove and playing 4-5-1 and making it difficult for us to break them down, we're doing exactly the same thing to teams, and not just good teams, we're doing it to someone like Wigan.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. You know, if you set out with a 4-5-1, you're saying we don't want to lose. If you start with a 4-4-2, you're going there to win. It's a psychological thing in that respect, and it makes a statement to your team. If you pick a team that's a 4-4-2, an attacking lineup, you know, you've got two wingers, two forwards, then you know you're going to go on the front foot and try and win the game. The key example is something like the game against Spurs. It was at home, but we start with a 4-4-2, and from the off, for the first time, you know, we had attacking possession. We didn't have to build from the back. And it really made a difference. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen that formation since that game.
Do you think the reason that we're playing a 4-5-1 is because we don't have the players for 4-4-2 or because Arsene is a little bit too cautious these days?
Well, I think we do have players for 4-4-2. We don't really know because we haven't really regularly played it with Cesc and Gilberto as a partnership in a 4-4-2 for quite a long time. The feeling is, I think, amongst a lot of people that the 4-4-2 was abandoned because that partnership didn't have, you know, enough strength, enough, you know, power to survive against a lot of 4-5-1 teams. Cesc is sort of, you know, a year, 2 years older since then, and I think gets a bit, I don't really know why people think he's lightweight, because he's actually, I bet if you look at the stats, he's one of the sort of biggest tacklers in the side. I mean, his tackle yesterday in the build-up to the goal was as good as anything you see from any of our other midfielders. So I don't really know what, you know, I think we need to try it because we have wide players. What we don't have is a Pires, someone who is going to get in the box regularly and score goals. I feel that Rosicki might have that in him, but, you know, Ljungberg's on the wane. We haven't really tried, so we don't really know, I think, is the answer.
Okay. Do you think, let's say with January coming up, and Arsene has said time and again he's not going to buy in January, do you think that the addition of, now, I'm not a particularly big fan of Ribery, but what he is a player that can go past the player on the outside, can spread the play. What we lack, really, is when we play, for example, Rosicki on the left, or Ljungberg on the left and Kleb on the right, what we lack is is width, because all of those, Freddie number one can't go past a man anymore.
Yeah.
He can't get past him on the outside, which is a shame. Rosicki, yeah. His natural tendency is to cut back inside onto his right foot. Hleb, for some reason, seems to be allergic to going past a defender on the right, you know, going mm-hmm. past him and go to the byline and put a cross in. So would a player who can, number one, has pace, and number two, who's quite happy to run at defenders and go past them and throw a ball into the box, would that make a difference to the manager's thinking in terms of playing a 4-4-2?
I think it might make a difference, but I wonder if he thinks we already have somebody in that Theo Walcott has been used a lot as a wide player. And a lot of what Ribéry brings to the game, I think, is what Wenger might be hoping Walcott can bring. Certainly over the next couple of seasons. I think that Ribéry, I think he's a decent player, actually. I think he's got good potential. And the things that frustrate me about someone like Freddie Ljungberg are the things that Ribéry has. As you say, he can't beat a man Ljungberg, whereas Ribéry can. Ljungberg hasn't got that extra yard of pace, whereas Ribéry has. But I just wonder, I don't think that Arsene would go in for somebody like Ribéry who would hold somebody like Walcott potentially back.
Right. Potentially. We're talking, let's face it, Theo is only 17 years of age.
Yeah.
He's got plenty of time, to make his mark on the team. Ribéry, could he play on the left-hand side? I don't know.
Ribéry, yeah, he can play on the left, I think. He's definitely played on the left of France. I haven't seen him much from us, so I don't really know. He could play from the left, but then you have to sort of from the left in a 4-5-1, I suppose, because I think Rosicki is going to be a starter in whatever formation we play. And I think, you know, he deserves that as long as he's not injured. I think Ribéry would be a good signing, don't get me wrong, because he would add a lot of what we don't have. And, you know, Walcott is a good player, but sometimes he does look a bit out of his depth, or, you know, he lacks experience, he can't play every game. We have no other winger as sort of what I would call a true winger, you know. Since Reyes has left, somebody with pace who can get to the byline and can, well, you know, we never cross the ball, but potentially cross the ball. And Ribéry would add that. I think it's a nice idea, but I just cannot see Arsene going for it. I know he said often before, I won't be spending, and sort of it's turned out to all be a ruse, as it were. But I really, this time, think that it's for real. I cannot see anyone coming in January.
No, me neither. As was pointed out a few weeks back, it would take, you know, somebody going out for somebody to come in. And I don't know, it's hard to see who you could sell, you know, at this point. Anyway, we'll see what happens in January. No doubt there'll be speculation galore, and it'll keep us busy on our blogs at least. Go on.
No, I was just going to say the only thing that will happen in January is we may have somebody return from injury, you know, a Diaby or, I mean, I don't know what stage Lauren's at.
From what I'm told, he's still a good way away from getting back to first team.
Right, yeah.
Which is a shame.
I think the return of Diaby, though, would be a good thing, though, for the squad. If we are going to continue with a 4-5-1, then he is somebody who I would like to see in there, you know, playing a similar role to the one Baptiste sort of played last night, you know, as the third midfielder in there, someone who can get forward, because in his few appearances for us, he has shown a willingness to get into the box and be a presence. So I'd like to see him back.
Me too. It'll be interesting to see how he's used and where exactly he's used, and maybe he might be the player to bring back the 4-4-2 with. Anyway, on Sunday, is it Saturday or Sunday?
It's Thursday.
I know today is Thursday, but the next game.
Saturday.
Saturday, Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Two old boys involved there. Number one, Saul Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, Tony Adams. We'll start with Tony Adams, because somebody left a comment on the comment audio system thing that I must think of a good name for. And I'm having some technical problems today, so I can't deal with that as I would normally. So we'll talk about it now. He said, you know, he's a great player, an Arsenal legend, absolutely spot on, as far as I'm concerned. Tony Adams was always one of my very favourite players, being a, a centre half with no pace myself. I identified very, very readily with him. but since he's left, his relationship with the club has not been particularly great, you would say. He didn't show up for Dennis Bergkamp's testimonial. He didn't show up for the final day at Highbury when, you know, we had practically every Arsenal player that ever played for the club was there. But a guy who was captain for, you know, close to, you know, 15 years couldn't be seen anywhere. He said he wanted to say goodbye to Highbury on his own. But what do you make of what's happened with Tony since he's left?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I don't know all the ins and outs. I mean, I don't even know. Do you know if he was invited to these events?
I'm sure he was, yeah. I mean, there's no question. If you get Oleg Luzhny there, and I love Oleg as well, but I mean, you know, if Oleg Luzhny is there, then you can be quite sure that Tony Adams was invited.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite clear that something has sort of soured relations. And I wonder, from his part, is it something about wanting to separate himself, you know, build an identity away from Arsenal Football Club? You know, it's quite clear that he didn't go straight into coaching with Arsenal, which possibly would have been an option. He went away, you know, he's been to Holland, he was at Wickham, and now he's at Portsmouth. And I think it's about, Adam seems to have this thing of wanting to be his own man, trying to say things that other people wouldn't say, like that time when he suggested that Wayne Rooney should be left out of the England team.
Yeah.
Sort of slightly strange suggestions which are said to sort of create a stir. And I think he maybe feels that, you know, there was Adams the player, Adams the, you know, Mr. Arsenal, all this stuff, and that now he's trying to, you know, he's looking at a career as a manager. It's had its ups and downs so far in coaching for him, but he's trying to definitely be his own person and individual and sort of build his own identity away from the club. I think, you know, I think that he's wrong in that respect. I don't think that means that he can't go to Pat Shaviero's testimonial. But that's the only explanation I can find for what's going on.
It's a strange one, all right, because, you know, no matter what he does, you know, he's always going to, you know, have that association with Arsenal. And, you know, from his playing days, he spent his entire career at the club. He was a captain for lots of years and, you know, became, you know, with the famous back four, Adams with his hand in the air is sort of an iconic Arsenal image. So, I don't know, it just seems to me, it seems a bit strange and a bit disappointing that for whatever reason he feels he can't get involved. And I know a lot of fans were unhappy that he wasn't there on the last day at Highbury. But anyway, complicated.
It's a shame he can't embrace it, because it's no bad thing to have been captain of Arsenal Football Club for 10 years or whatever it was and won all the trophies that he won. I can't understand wanting to separate yourself from that, because it's a huge achievement and he should be very proud of it and all Arsenal fans are very proud of him. It's just a shame that relationship isn't as reciprocal and positive as it should be.
Absolutely. Okay, another one. Sol Campbell left this summer. Not too many people were unhappy to see him go. To be fair to him, he was a very, very big player for us on every level. His last season was pretty bad, and it soured the relationship, you know, with a lot of fans, particularly, you know, the walkout against West Ham. For me, that was unforgivable. But when it comes down to it, he doesn't really deserve any stick. He doesn't deserve any you know, beyond what a normal opposition player would get. Does he?
No, I don't think he'll get a negative reception. I mean, it's no Ashley Cole situation. The interesting thing about it is that he did, Arsenal insists that Sol said that he wanted to go abroad, and that's why that he was released from his contract without a fee. I don't know how much truth there is in that. I mean, I think if Sol wanted to get a move abroad, maybe he did, maybe it didn't materialise. I can't imagine that Portsmouth was his first choice. But he's done well since he got there. You know, they're doing a very good job. You've got another Arsenal boy in Kanu, who's scoring all the goals now. And I don't think anyone has any particular hard feelings. I think that the West Ham walkout was a real low for Sol, personally and professionally. And I think the Champions League final goal probably helped redeem him slightly in a lot of Arsenal fans' eyes. You know, it allowed him to leave on a slightly more positive note. And I think on reflection, he really did help us, you know, over those years when we lost Adams, Bold, Keown. He was there to, you know, bridge the gap, as it were. And he has to be looked on as a good signing and a good Arsenal player.
Absolutely. No, I agree with that because, you know, really for his first three seasons, four seasons, you know, he was just... He was rock solid, rock solid. So anyway, we'll see what happens on Saturday. We'll have to leave it there for this week. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
That's a pleasure.
Okay, all right then. Till the next Arscast. Now, Arsene Wenger-Hawkins this week was all set to do a very interesting piece, a feature-length documentary, in fact, on foreign ownership of English football clubs. It would have been absolutely fantastic, but it wasn't to be. He received a proposition by email. This is what it said.
Hi there, Mr. Arsene Wenger-Hawkins. My name is Elvinana Goldrick Hawkins. Your sexy bastard voice and violent tendencies really get the juices in my lady garden flowing down my inner thighs. Could we meet up some night to paint the town red and white? You reject me and I will show up at your fucking apartment in lingerie, throw you down on a beautiful French rug, smother you with my all-enveloping hairy juicy fanny causing you to die from asphyxia as I orgasm on your face. No pressure then, but the arse, but the arse.
Up the arse indeed. Well, I passed it on to Mr. AWH himself, and this is what he had to say.
Okay, lady. And I call you lady because even with my super hairy, made better because my sense of touch is more or less useless, I couldn't make out your real name. I have to warn you that I am not such a pushover, although if someone does push me over I find it very hard to get back up. I'm like a beetle on its back. While the idea of your drippy lady garden, as you so eloquently put it, more than turns me on, the idea of being asphyxiated by your orgasmic fanny sort of turns me off again. However, it reminds me of a time when I tried to sign Hollywood actress Hilary Swank to play for my team. There would have been no problem with her being a lady because not only does she look like a man, she looks like a man crossed with a horse. At that time the league had no woman policy, but any man who had been genetically modified and interbred with an animal was free to take part. When we got her in for her medical, though, it was a big shock. Physically, she passed all the tests. She could jump a 7-foot wall with Harvey Smith on her back. She came first in the 245 at Newmarket, and her hay eating was second to none. It was her lady bits were the problem. Where we expected to see normal things, she had snakes growing, and if you look closely there were miniature hedgehogs, and bright blue scorpions, shooting scorpion piss all over the place. At that point we called off the deal. I heard later that she was approached by Chelsea, but they didn't sign her because they already had a squad full of horrible cunts. Oh yes.
So there you go. Fantastic for Arsene Wenger-Hawkins that after just a few weeks on the site, he's receiving all kinds of propositions. And me, 5 years after doing it, I've yet to receive one. Must be his sexy voice. What can you do? Oh, he also has a very quick message for Alan Pardew, who was sacked during the week.
You cunt.
As always, succinct and to the point. Arsene Wenger-Hawkins will be back next week. Now, the bit where I answer your questions, and thanks to all of you who left comments during the week, but for some reason, I couldn't download the audio, apart from for one of them, which, you know, I don't understand what's going on. But anyway, I'll try and get through the questions, because they're all very good. Richard actually asked about Tony Adams, and why he's been so out of favour with the club since he left. That was sort of discussed in the Arscast, so we'll leave that one there. Thank you, Richard. Gail Clichy Estrés Rapide, in his tremendously posh voice, asked, who should we play at the moment, Senderos or Giroud? And I think, obviously, at the moment, Giroud's the guy in form. He's fit. He's had a good pre-season. I think Senderos is struggling because he hasn't had a pre-season. I know some people don't rate him. I think he's a very good player. But I do think people have to take into account that he's injured or has just come back from an injury. He's struggling a bit at the moment. But I think we need to support our players. And people forget that he was part of that defence that did so well in the Champions League, and you know, obviously he's got the potential to be a good player. He just needs time, and he's only 21, which is still very young for a central defender. What I'm glad though is that we have Kolo, we have Gallus, we have Senderos, and we have Giroud, who are both all four are very good centre halves to have. Boz sent me 20 seconds of silence. Thank you for that, Boz. I'm not sure what way to take it. Alex from Malawi just left a message to say hi and that he enjoys the Arsecast. Thank you, Alex in Malawi. And finally, Tyler, who was on last week asking about Tom, was on this week saying that he's got an Ashley Cole shirt, which obviously he bought in the past. And now he would like to get rid of it, but he'd like to get rid of it in an ingenious, in a special way. And what he'd like to do is to make a video of this destruction. So what he's looking for is suggestions from Arseblog readers or from Arsecast listeners on how he might get rid of the shirt, whether it's setting it on fire, whether it's smearing it with poo and posting it to Ashley Cole himself. Who knows? So here's what you do. If you're interested, go to the Arseblog page, click on the Arsecast link on the right-hand side, and leave a message on this audio thing, which I'm sure I'll get sorted by next week. So leave a message and give us some suggestions about how Tyler can get rid of the Ashley Cole shirt. I'll play them next week then on the show in what will be the last Arsecast before Christmas. Only 9 days to Christmas, folks. I hope you've all done your shopping. Ashley Cole's book still hasn't sold more than 4,000 copies, which is fantastic. And I'm sure Perry Grove's book is doing very, very well. But remember, if it's a Christmas present you want for an Arsenal fan, let's make sure that Perry gets that book. And I'm sure that one day down the line, when Perry Groves realizes how famous Arseblog has made him and how much money Arseblog has made him since we started promoting that book, that he'll feel like he should donate some of that enormous wealth to me in order that I might continue the mission that I have. It is a mission. It's a calling, a vocation, as such, sort of, not really. I wish someone would send me money. All donations in unmarked bills can be sent to 7 Dublin, Ireland. They'll find me here, I promise you. Okay, that's just about that for another Arsecast, so thanks to classicfootballshirts.co.uk. Finally, we have, as always, our bet of the week with thanks to bluesquare.com. That's www.bluesq.com. This week, Simon Wolf says, Premiership games at Ashburton Grove have followed a similar script. Arsenal score first, they win 3-0. Arsenal concede first, and it finishes 1-1. Every game has been the same. So this week, if you want to back Arsenal to score first and win 3-0, you can get that at 8-1. While if you fancy Arsenal to concede first and draw 1-1, you can get that at 12-1. So get down to www.bluesq.com, put your bet on, and rake in the money. I'm sure it'll happen. Right, that's it. Another Arsecast with thanks to classicfootballshirts.co.uk is over. But don't cry. There'll be another one next week, probably. Until then, take it easy. Cheerio.